Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're going to talk about Billy in the Mothership, which occurred back in 1975. I'm going to talk a little bit about the New World Order, and we'll be back in the book, The Might of Thoughts. But I thought it would be good to do a little intro again to those who may be listening to the show for the first time, or those that need to connect the dots, which I'm always one of those, so I continually try to connect all these dots in this amazing story. Edward Albert Meyer, he's about 80 years old. He lives about 45 minutes east of Zurich in Switzerland. It's in northern Switzerland. He lives in a tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidruti, which is in the pine forests and the snow-capped mountains of Switzerland. He grew up in even farther north in Switzerland in an area called Bulac, near a town, or actually in a town called Niederflux, which I believe is nearby some mountains called the Eichenmoser and Bruder Mountains. Back in 1943, Billy started to get telepathic messages from a man named Svoth. Svoth was right around 900 years old or so, and he was an extraterrestrial man, not an alien. I really don't think that term is appropriate. These are human beings that live on other worlds, and Svoth was from a race of people that originally allowed themselves to be called the Pleiadians. But they're not from our Pleiades. They're from a star system some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades in a different space-time configuration. These extraterrestrials tell us that our universe is divided into what you might call seven different dimensions or seven different space-time configurations. And in these different dimensions, we have star systems, planets, galaxies, in all of these different space-time configurations. And there is a Sirius system in a different space-time configuration than ours. There's a star system called Lyra Vega that also exists in one of these other seven different space-time configurations. So these extraterrestrials, they can travel from star to star, but they also move between these different dimensions. And Svoth's people live on a planet called Era. Era is very Earth-like in terms of its size, and its atmosphere is very, very similar. The people on Era haven't had war for something like 20,000 plus years. They're in what's called the fifth stage of human evolution, where many of their people hold the title of Ishwish, or King of Wisdom. And at that stage, people have really mastered all the knowledge of what's called creational natural laws, the laws of the universe. They control their thinking, and they live very prosperous lives, and they're at the evolutionary stage where they are starting to lose the need for a body even. And the people on Era are very, very highly evolved. They don't use money anymore. They don't create roads. They don't drive cars. They have a shared asset scheme. The transportation moves above the surface, so they don't scar their planet with roads. There's no roadkill. They don't mine their planets that they live on for oil or gas or anything of that nature. They live in perfect harmony with their world, which means their planet has forests everywhere. And they keep their population low, right at about 500 million. And that's one of the creational natural laws. The other law they're very aware of is the law of reincarnation. And they understand that the spirit form of a human being comes back many, many, many times with different personalities and lives different lives. And the purpose of our life is the evolution of our conscious awareness, because there's the highest intelligence in our universe is something called the universal consciousness, and it creates spirit forms in order to help it evolve. So we, our spiritual consciousness, our spirit form, lives many, many lives. We evolve through 7 evolutionary steps that progress over millions and even billions of years. And then eventually our spirit form merges back with the universal consciousness, and we take all this knowledge from all these lifetimes and we bring this back to the universal intelligence. And these extraterrestrials don't use the term God, because the intelligence that is behind our universe is not like a heavenly father. It's not like a human being with a personality. It radiates love, more like though the sun would radiate light and heat. It is completely neutral. It's neither good nor evil. And the best definition for it you can probably get is a German word called Wesenheiten. And the Wesenheiten is a intelligence with no personality, that's neither good nor evil, that radiates love, and it evolves according to a predetermined pattern. So the universe goes through fixed steps in its evolution, and our universe is in the first stage of its evolution. It's 46 trillion years old. It was created in something that we call the Big Bang. The Meyer Information calls this the Zohar. And our universe has been expanding for 46 trillion years. And planets are being formed, and some planets have life, and some planets have intelligent life. And this process goes on because of the evolution of the universe itself. And it has its own evolutionary process that goes through. It will continue to expand for the next 155 trillion years. And then it goes into its contraction phase, which will end, and then the universe goes through what's called sleep time, and then the next stage of its evolution begins. So the purpose of our lives, and I say lives, many lives, is to evolve our understanding, and we eventually bring that intelligence back to the universal consciousness. We're kind of boots on the ground for the universe, so to speak. Now, these extraterrestrial humans that Billy met with, they were very aware of his particular spirit form. Every human has a spirit form. It's the real you. It's also called your innermost creational personality. It centers in an area of the middle brain called the superior colliculus. And the spirit form is called the Geist form in the German, and it enters into the body of the child 21 days before the sperm, or after the sperm fertilizes the egg, and it brings with it a new consciousness. And the spirit form goes in the superior colliculus, that's the middle brain, where all of the senses are integrated, where the eyesight occurs, And its energy goes out through the whole body in what's called a lattice structure, and it causes the heart to beat, and the child is alive again, even though the material consciousness is completely undeveloped at this point. But in the wisdom of the spiritual consciousness has all the accumulated knowledge from all the previous lives. And Billy has written many books, 50 books. And one of these books, called The Psyche, says the typical Earth human being, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, their spiritual consciousness is about 4.5 million years old, which is really young in terms of the spiritual consciousness. But if you think about all the lives that your spirit form has been through, that is actually pretty long time. So most of us have much more wisdom than we realize, and it's more a matter of learning to control our thoughts, because the key to your happiness really comes in your own thoughts, and the might and the power of our thoughts is very, very incredible. So when Billy was a young boy growing up in Bulak and Niederflux and northern Switzerland, he started to get these telepathic messages right around 1943, and eventually up around 1945, Soth landed his ship in a field, and young Billy was brought up into the ship by some technological means, and he would always say it was as if being lifted up by ghostly hands. And he would go into the ship, and Soth would take him up high into Earth orbit, and Billy would look at all the screens on the ship and see all the people that Soth was observing, and Soth would tell Billy about his previous lives and the fact that he had been incarnating on the earth. His spiritual consciousness had been incarnating on the earth as Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And in each one of these lifetimes, he taught an ancient universal teaching that he's teaching now and that is spread out through these 50 books. It's called the Teaching of the Spirit. And this young boy was in awe listening to Soth. And one of the things that Soth did when young Edward Albert Meyer was on the ship was to put a device on his head, not to mind control him, but to protect his mind, for one thing, because there were many people that wanted to stop this mission and get into this young boy's mind and cause him trouble and stop this mission to stop it from occurring. Because the current structure in the world is not one that's conducive to evolution. And anyone that's promoting evolution then becomes the enemy of the current system. So Soth put a device on Billy's head to protect his consciousness at a very young age. It also woke up abilities that he had in previous lifetimes, so he could start to see the future again and see historical trends and things that were happening. Soth told Billy that the biggest problem with the people of the earth is that they don't understand what the creation is anymore, this universal consciousness. And Soth told Billy that there was a secret dark order coming over the earth, and that they were taking all the money and they were trying to take all the power. And these conversations occurred during World War II, right around near the end of World War II in 1945. And Soth told Billy that the Japanese would drop the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and this was the beginning of a very difficult time called the third millennium. It's a transformation period that's going to last, the Maya people say, right around 800 years. And slowly, slowly, the people of the earth start to understand the error of their ways, and we start to become a galactic society, so to speak, society that lives according to these laws that we'll talk about in a little bit. I wanted to reintroduce one of the amazing contact report 31, that occurred in 1975. Billy had different contacts. His first contacts, the first 11 years of his life, were with this man named Svath. The second set of contacts for another 11 years were with Asket. And Billy lived about 11 years of a normal life. And then right around 1975 or so, the contacts with Semyase started. And this was the 31st contact that Billy had with Semyase. And the contacts were less than 6 months old. And he was going to take a trip with Semyase that would start out on her beam ship, and she would fly around the soul system here and show Billy what was going on in our solar system. But Billy was going to be gone for 30 hours. So he prepared himself for this trip. He got up early. He loaded his little moped. He had a moped that he would drive out to these contact places. And he drove out to the contact spot, and the spacecraft arrived. And he was greeted by a now familiar extraterrestrial woman named Semyase. It was about 10:14 in the morning, and this Plarian ship was waiting, and they ascended into the ship in a beam of energy. And this may be the greatest adventure in Billy's life. And when it was all over, after the 30 hours were done, Semyase brought Billy back to the same spot. He retrieved his moped and drove it back home. And the first thing he did is he sits down at his desk to receive the transmission, which is, let me read it this way and it'll describe it. Suddenly he was tuned in and following the, he would get the information rapidly with no repeats, no stopping for correction, and a continuous run until the transmission was completed. This is a very, very big contact report too, so it's amazing. So if you've ever seen Billy types, he types at incredible speed with one hand while he's getting this transcript verbatim from the central computer of the ship. One of the first things that Semyase and Billy did was go to Venus. And Venus, one thing that popped out again while I was reading through this again was the fact that Venus is in the early stage of the development of primitive life. Now let me read what it says here. But don't be disappointed by the appearance of this world. This is Semyase speaking. The planet is in a stage of early development of primitive life, which is pretty amazing if you think about it. And there is something called, the description says here, immensely dense masses of clouds suddenly surrounded us, and of the most, they were greatly varied in colors, and the cloud cover was unbelievably deep, many kilometers, and there seems to be no end, and the ship would just sink down through these clouds for miles and miles and miles. And as you know, Venus is extremely hot, and they made trips around this planet several times. Now I want to read a little section here that's also kind of interesting. It says here, but even the extreme enlargement of the images on the screens or by getting closer to the surface, not the slightest trace of those alleged life forms is discovered. So there was no people on these planets. And all these planets, which may only be partially called planets because not all of them are real planets, there are no such life forms that would be responsible for the alleged telepathic outpourings. And this is, you know, people said they've met with Venusians and such. And the Meyer information says no, that's not the case, that there are humans living on Venus. One of the things that Semyase and Billy were about to see, though, is the link between the Apollo space capsule and the Soyuz, which was the Russian space capsule. And this was a docking that occurred in 1975. Let me read a little section from this. Billy says, "The whole thing seems crazy to me. Inside this small gondola live two human beings." They're looking at the Russian ship right now. Semyase says, "It's true, the capsules are very small and really offer no living space. And I know it causes you fear to think that you could be there inside, and you have a good reason to feel that way." And Billy says, "You are speaking in riddles, Semyase." Semyase says, "In time you will understand my words, but don't you want to look inside the capsule?" Billy says something about how small it is and it's airtight. Anyway, Semyase has a technology that allows them to look out inside this capsule. It literally can look through the steel, so to speak. And Billy describes it as, he says, "But this is nothing more than a metallic flying coffin, Semyase. The men are so very squeezed inside this box. How could this thing have been shot up here, as everything is just downright primitive? Just look at these interiors and all their equipment. It's really primitive." And Semyase says, "It's not fair to make the comparison between our technology and their technology." It's interesting that Semyase says that the Pleiaron are 3,500 years ahead of us technologically. They're even many, many thousands of years ahead of us spiritually, tens of thousands of years. Semyase tells Billy that he's having this anxiety because of a past life experience. She says, "Don't worry about it, as you still are unable to solve the tension within your own thoughts, which trace far back into a past life." So evidently Billy must have been stuck in a space capsule in one of his previous lives, and perhaps he, I don't know, nearly died or maybe even died under some strange conditions like this. And also Billy has a whole series of photographs from this trip. He has photographs of the Apollo ship, of the Soyuz capsule, the link-up. He has photographs of the mothership, a couple of photographs, a photograph of Jupiter and the mothership there. Let me read something here that I found very interesting. And this is Billy describing being away from the Earth and seeing the stars in space. And he says the following: "Without another word, she sets the beam ship in motion again. And already a few minutes later, the Earth has shrunk to the size of a large light object, shimmering bluish through space. Having already observed this several times before, it doesn't interest me particularly. So I turn to Semyase, who sits in her oddly shaped, comfortable chair, and directs the beam ship through the darkness of space. And this is what I found interesting. It says, in which billions of different glittering stars of many sizes twinkle, 1,000 times clearer and more distinctly than they can be seen from Earth. A truly fantastic image that I will never forget. This is heaven as it lives and breathes. Among the large and small stars, innumerable groups of stars can be recognized. Star clusters, spiral nebulae, the gigantic band of the Milky Way, in immeasurable beauty and size, and 1,000 other things. Everything is simply fantastic. And not only do I have an idea, of the immense size and the magnificence of the universe. In the first flight, and also for the previous hours, I had not observed it well enough because I was caught and dominated by many other things. But now, I look at everything in peace and with clear eyes, and I can't describe the infinite vastness and the size and the splendor and the beauty of the universe that stretches out before me. The words fail me. It can only be seen and understood, and I suddenly feel free and light and elevated above the struggle of everyday life on Earth, where I always feel so strange and out of place. Here, that feeling is simply gone, and everything is different in me. I feel really good and at home here. I don't know why, but it really is so. And I am detached from all earthly concerns, worries, and problems. I feel free. And Semyase interrupted his thoughts for a minute. She has a few statements because they're about to go to what's called the Great Spacer. You know, Semyase and Billy are in her beam ship, and they're flying through our solar system, and they're heading to Jupiter, and they see the giant planet Jupiter, and they see this giant mothership by Jupiter. And all I can do is read this here. It's just tremendous. It says, at a distance, difficult for me to estimate, a huge metal sphere is hanging in the darkness of space, reflecting only weakly the light of the sun. Very slowly now, the speed of the beam ship decreases. Semyase is sitting very attentively before her instrument panels, steering knowingly and carefully in the direction of the huge sphere, which looks to me like a small planet. So this mothership is so large, it looks like a small planet, and it's orbiting Jupiter, and Semyase is flying her little beam ship towards this metallic planet, so to speak. And then it says here, I can see way down in the lower third, a little bit to the left, the big gap is opening laterally, which I soon recognize as an entrance hatch. So there's this hangar opening, and Semyase is going to fly her beam ship right inside this hangar. And the whole hangar is huge. Semyase describes this as a city. There are 141,000 people on this craft. This is a ship for intergalactic travel. It also will travel between the universal barriers if the two universes are adjacent. This is a pretty amazing craft. And the Pleiaren actually learned much about building this ship from a group of people called the Timmers. And the Timmers are Ascot's race. Ascot was Billy's second contact. And they're about 350 years ahead of the Pleiaren in terms of their technology. The diameter of the craft, the mothership, is 17,182 meters. It's a tremendously large craft. And one of the interesting things that's always struck me is when Semyonov and Billy are moving around inside this ship, they get picked up by this craft which hovers initially just a couple of inches above the floor. It's about the size of a Volkswagen. And, well, let me read this here. It says, then completely silently comes a small floating vehicle. No bigger in size than a Volkswagen car. It floats about 20 centimeters above the floor and is equipped with very comfortable seats. And they travel vertically inside this ship. And one of the interesting things is Semyonov stops the floating vehicle and docks it into a side compartment. Now, in the past, when I've looked at this contact report, I thought there were just one of these massive gardens in the ship, but there's actually multiple, I think. It says here, in here there is an open space of approximately 2,000 times 1,000 meters. And I feel myself completely transported into a magical world. Whenever I look, I see green fields, trees, shrubs, and flowers, a real little garden of Eden inside the spacecraft. It's very beautiful. It's always something that really struck me whenever I read this. So they had docked this little craft in a side compartment and looked in this huge, beautiful garden. And then they undocked this little spacecraft and kept going vertically in the craft. And supposedly, this ship is higher than any mountain on Earth, higher than Mount Everest. And Semyonov and Billy have a little discussion because the Plejaran say that Mount Chimborazo in Ecuador is actually taller than Mount Everest because they determine the height of a mountain from going to the center of the planet to the tip of the mountain. So to them, the highest planet, the highest mountain on Earth is Chimborazo, not Everest. Which is, and they also say, Semyonov said this, let me read this. She said, you said fabulous. The mountain is indeed surrounded by many myths and legends in earlier times and has played an important role in the activities of extraterrestrial intelligences. So this would be something to try to research a little farther. Billy got to the next thing he did here, and this is probably as far as I'll go for today, is he got to meet with the leader of the ship, the captain, who was what's called a king of wisdom, which is Semyonov's father. And this was the individual that we call Ptah or Ta. And Billy went a little bit higher up into the bridge of the ship. And it's very, very interesting there. They have a way with their ships to, with their metals, to make them transparent. So I thought it would be a nice little segue to just look at the mothership, the contact port 31 for a little while, since we've been studying the Might of Thoughts. But let's head back to the Might of Thoughts again. This is, again, one of Billy's books. The contact port that we were just talking about, contact report 31, and this was going on while Billy was having contacts with Semyonov, and she was giving him some of the information related to the books that Billy has written. Billy has had three or four extraterrestrial mentors depending on how you look at it. And he's also supposedly able to contact this spiritual plane called Erhat Athrasata, which also gives him information. And this is where his 40 books come from. And probably the book that I've spent the most time on is a book called The Might of Thoughts. And it's a book that teaches us how to think. And it's so critical that we learn how to think in a neutral, positive way, because how you think determines what happens in your life. It determines the circumstances that take place in your life. And one of the things that this book said right away was that the people of the earth are ill in our consciousness. And this is the perfect book to read to rectify the illness in our consciousness. In Billy's German, each of the books are bilingual. And the left page is German, the right page is English. And on the left page, there are spiritual teaching texts that are in German, and there's an evolution code associated with them. And this code is supposed to release impulses from the universal storage banks. There are storage banks around our planet, around our solar system, around our galaxy, and around our universe. And these impulses start to work evolutively in you subconsciously in ways you're not aware of. So it's good to look at the German. I'm trying to do it more. The German language originated from the old Lyrian language. The people from Lyra Vega were here, I think it was 239,000 years ago. And then even farther back, like 22 million years, something of that nature. The humankind here on Earth is ill in its consciousness. And the dedication of the book, The Might of Thoughts, was written by Elizabeth Moosberger, who said that this book is, which lies before you, is dedicated to humankind that's ill in its consciousness, so that it finds again the natural way which it lost so long ago. Elizabeth Moosberger, her husband, wrote a book that I have there somewhere in my bookshelf. I can see it vaguely now, and I think the title is And Still They Flock. It's a really good book on the Meyer material. I recommend it. It's fallen apart. I read it so much, but I'm afraid that's going to happen to my thoughts as well. In Contact Report 239, Elizabeth Moosberger and Billy in 1991 saw three discs in Switzerland there. They were 300 meters in diameter. They exhibited a pulsating and rotating motion of whitish color. They were three ships from the Tao universe. Remember, the Tao universe is our sister universe. It was created 46 trillion years ago along with our universe. It's where the Timmers come from. Ask its people. One of the things emphasized by the Might of Thoughts is learning to think independently. And you cannot evolve your consciousness unless you learn to think independently. And our society seems to be all about getting us to think like everyone else, when in order to evolve, you have to think like you. You have to make up your own mind. The television, the radio, the newspapers, the magazines, the books all try to tell you how to think. You know, they don't allow you to make up your own mind, but what you need to do is to make up your own mind. So in the great mass of people, there are only few that have their own thoughts, that have their own thinking, A thought is an idea or opinion produced by thinking or occurring suddenly in the mind. And the mass media is dumbing down the people of the earth. And one of the things that we've been discouraged about is we've been discouraged away from logic. And we should, in fact, learn to think logically. The religions of the earth have told us not to think logically and not to think independently. But if we don't think logically, then we can get very bad out of the control of the good human nature. It's called Sartan, which is not the best pronunciation. But we are the forger of our fortune. All the human being's might is anchored in his or her thoughts. So you are the forger of your own fortune. You're the creator of your own destiny. You create your own good luck by your good thoughts. Your good thoughts produce good feelings. Your good feelings produce good habits. Your good habits, your good thoughts, your good feelings produce good circumstances in your life. Your external circumstances are mostly caused by your thoughts. Now, you can have conscious thoughts or you can have unconscious thoughts. And we all have some unconscious thoughts, but do your best to control your thoughts, to be neutral, positive, equalized in your thinking. So you're balanced. So you don't get too positive and you don't get negative. Don't ever get negative. Be confident. Be optimistic. Be relaxed. Cheerful. Enthusiastic. Be in harmony. Be persistent. Persevere. Endure. Tell yourself you're calm. You're satisfied. You're the creator of your own morality, your own character, your entire personality. You are the creator of your psyche, the smith of your entire destiny, the smith, the creator of your life circumstances, your environment. Your consciousness is like a garden. You need to clarify your thoughts, your good thoughts. Clarify them. Repeat them. Make them less confused. Think about your thoughts. Meditate on them. If you feel confident, tell yourself why. Make it clear. Get rid of the confusion and the uncertainty in your thoughts. Make your thoughts free from ambiguity. Confusion means to pour together, to mingle together. So with confusion, the boundary between things are lost. And the distinction between things are lost. So have clarity in your thinking. And that's one of the important aspects of the Meyer information. And I have been working over and over again on a particular page in the Might of Thoughts called, it's page 224, and it deals with a German term called Lebenskraft, which is the life power. And it says in English, therefore, it is necessary to search for the source of the life power and to develop the power in order to have a reliable life potential upon which you can depend, therefore, in which you can completely trust. So we're told to search for the source of this life power. And the life power is in your consciousness. You have certain thoughts which radiate neutral positive in your consciousness. And we're told to search for the source of that life power. So analyze your thoughts and find the thoughts and the activities, because they kind of go hand in hand. Certain activities will have a positive impact on your thoughts. And that's one of the things that I've found lately is find those activities and exercise is critical, at least for me, to stimulate the thinking that brings in this life power. The source of the life power, which must be created by oneself, lies in the consciousness, that is to say, in its thoughts, which must be formed, tended, and nurtured in such a way that they correspond to a progressive kind of wise equipped with a zeal for life and intention and an endeavor and ideal. There's a lot to break down here. So, this is in contrast to when tangled ideas confuse the thoughts and go abruptly from one extreme to another, causing a misdirection of the thoughts, which arises and which can trigger emotions. Let's go back over that again, because this happens to all of us. We get tangled ideas and our thoughts get confused. Tangled can be defined as twisted together, untidy, matted. It also means confused, jumbled, mixed up, messy, chaotic. Tangled can mean to bring together in a mass of confusedly interlaced or intertwisted threads. Tangled means a twisted mass, a snarl. Tangles are untidy. They are not in order. So what do these tangled ideas do? And notice they're ideas. They're I-D-E-A-S. They're not completely developed. Keep that in mind. So your ideas, which are underdeveloped, they're unripe, you haven't thought them through yet, they'll confuse your thoughts. They'll make your thoughts go from one extreme to another. They'll cause a misdirection of your thoughts. They'll trigger emotions. And emotions are different than feelings. Emotions are dangerous. Emotions rage out of control. And they can lead to manslaughter and murder. And when you have these uncompletely formed thoughts, these ideas, and they trigger emotions, they run all the room for virtue and rationality. It's out of your consciousness. And irrational and virtuelessness start to govern in your consciousness. And you cannot set what's called a zeal. And in the Meyer information, the zeal is called a life determination. It's more than a goal. It's bigger than that. It deals with your evolution. So once you get into this confused state, you're not able to set a zeal. You can't even imagine them. The whole concept of life determination and evolution starts to become foreign to you. Ideas cannot be, when they're in this state, they cannot be converted into what's called an IDEAL. In this state, in this tangled confusion, they cannot be converted into an ideal. You want to convert the idea into an ideal, IDEAL. So the individual becomes caught up or trapped by these ideas, and they cannot get free of them. So how do we convert the ideas into ideals, LS? You must do the following. The ideas must be thoroughly contemplated and worked through. So you have to completely think through these. And this means you have to come at it from a different perspective. It means you have to be neutral, positive in your thinking. Because if you're all worked up and you're in a tangle of confusion and you're emotional, you're triggered, and you're getting angry and you're ready to step away from murder, you're not going to do too well thinking. So you have to kind of get yourself in the back in control. Now here's part of the issue. Recognize that you have values and unvalues in the ideas. So an unvalue is something that, for example, a sociopath or a psychopath has a hard time having deep feelings for people. That's an unvalue that that psychopath has. Also, the inability to be logical, the inability to be rational. These are unvalues, and they are very destructive, these unvalues. I'll have to look. I was scanning my notes quickly here. I've got so much information in here. If I don't go through it step by step, I can actually get lost in my own. Okay, here are, and this is FIGU Bulletin 68, it says, these are unvalues, often characteristic of psychopaths. When we get into a psychopathic state, all of us do. Lack of logical decisions, lack of rational conduct, frequent change of sexual partner, boredom, parasitism, manipulative behavior with regard to fellow human beings. This is always the one that always was a warning sign to me. When someone, I see someone manipulating others or manipulating me, this is a warning. So, in the Meyer information, says the endorsement of torture is also an unvalue. So something to be to. So we value things, these unvalues, and these cause tangled ideas in our consciousness. So we want to recognize that we have values and unvalues. We want to handle values and unvalues in the ideas, and we want to keep our life moving towards evolutive striving, and we need to shape our ideas so we get the unvalues out of our ideas, but just have values that are progressive and higher. And the other thing we have to start to do is create an evolutive attitude. And we start to conform to that evolutive attitude. And it will just tell you, be neutral. Just be neutral. Be neutral. And you'll start to create a inner persistence in your ideas. IDEAS will be transformed into ideals, IDEALS, and then they'll start to be brought to fruition. So the power and the thoughts of the consciousness then can lead to education, learning, and to knowledge. So that is a very quick overview of some of the important ideals in the book, The Might of Thoughts. I thought in the last few minutes of the show, I would talk a little bit about what's called the New World Order. Billy calls it the Secret Dark Order. And what does the New World Order want to do? It's a group of the most powerful people in the world, and they are working to create a world government which will dictate all policy of every country, a world central bank, which will dictate global finance. They want to dictate a world currency. There will be no physical money, just entries in a computer. They want a world army to impose the world of the will of the world government. They want a microchip population. Don't allow them to put a microchip in you, whatever you do. You know, refuse the microchip. Go back to doing what you were doing, but don't take the microchip, whatever you do. They want a world government, a cashless society. They want an Orwellian state. George Orwell identified this. He wrote a book called 1984. I could never finish it. It was so depressing. Take my advice. It is what they're trying to do. They're using propaganda, surveillance, misinformation, denial of the truth. They've hidden so many things in history from us. It's incredible. They want a microchip population. And Billy has talked about the microchip in Figure Bulletin number 2. And this kind of goes along with something called the Deep Space Monitoring System. And America has satellites now which monitor everyone. And they want to implant a coded chip into you so that they can control you, control your emotions, control your thoughts. Very scary thing, what's going on right in the front of us. And as a part of this whole New World Order study, I want to talk a little bit about secret societies. We don't have a lot of time, but it's very interesting. So there has been a knowledge, a very advanced knowledge that has been in our civilization. It's been hidden because, and I've told you, my material talks about 150,000 years ago, a man named Pelagon living on the earth, and he brought a whole civilization, extraterrestrial humans here. Then the Atlantis and Lemuria started about 132,000 years ago. These societies destroyed themselves and almost destroyed the planets. Some of this knowledge, I believe, that is talked about, I think came from these earlier civilizations in the distant past. And the center of these secret societies is in London. And different countries have different branch managers. And in the United States, we have a guy named Rockefeller. So the same policies and structures, they exist all over the world. Billy calls it the secret dark order. He says what they want to do is take away our self-determination. And he explains it as a consciousness-conditioned tyranny. So they are conditioning our consciousness. So the world is controlled by very few people. The Windsors controlled England. The Windsors are part of what's called the Black Nobility bloodlines. The founding fathers of the United States were some of these people. Benjamin Franklin was an agent of the British Crown. He was involved in blood drinking and a human sacrifice organizations in Britain. He had a home on 36 Craven Street in London, and bodies were found buried under the home of Benjamin Franklin. He was one of the founding fathers in the United States. He spent a lot of time in London. He was a member of these elite societies. One was called the Hellfire Club, and it was involved with human sacrifice, blood drinking, and a lot of just sex and carnality. So obviously we're not taught these things, and the world is a much different place than we realize. So what this group wants to do is they want to control. And the basis for human control is the keeping people in ignorance. There's a vast amount of knowledge that is being hidden from the people. And this is why I talk about this Meyer information so much, because this information is kind of hidden from the people. You don't hear much about this. You don't hear much about the book The Psyche or The Way to Live or The Might of Thoughts or The Goblet of Truth. I mean, this is what's going to bring knowledge to the people of the earth. In any case, I hope you've enjoyed the show. I've enjoyed bringing it to you. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Hopefully, we'll be back online tomorrow with some more interesting information dealing with the world of our thoughts, the might of thoughts, Macht der Gedanken in the German. Have a great evening.